From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Ed Gordon. The primary defeats of three incumbents this week sent shockwaves up the political aisle on both sides. In Georgia, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney could not overcome the many controversies she stirred, including a much-publicized run-in with the law after she allegedly struck a Capitol Police officer. She lost to DeKalb County Commissioner Hank Johnson. In Connecticut, three-term Democratic senator and former vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman lost to newcomer Ned Lamont. Lamont was critical of the moderate Lieberman's support for President Bush and the Iraq War, and now Lieberman vows to fight on against his own party. And in Michigan, another moderate incumbent Republican Joe Schwartz fell to challenger Tim Walberg. Like Lieberman, Schwartz lost in part because of his apparent willingness to straddle traditional party lines. It seems that for whatever reason, partisanship has taken a major place in this year's midterm elections. Is there more to come, or were Tuesday's upsets merely a blip on the political radar? To help us understand what lessons both parties should take away from these telling results, we are joined now by Jennifer Palmieri, Vice President of Communications at the Center for American Progress and National Press Secretary for the 2004 Edwards for President campaign. Jennifer, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Also joining us from NPR's New York Bureau is Robert George, an editorial writer for the New York Post and a former senior writer for House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Robert, nice to have you as well.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be here.
Let's start with this for both of you. Two things. Number one, is this a backlash? And if so, what kind of backlash is it exactly? Jennifer?
I think that if you look at Connecticut in particular, I think that there were two things happening. One is that the vote, the Lieberman defeat reflects an overall discontent that most voters in the country have, 62% of them have, with the way the war is going in Iraq. And then I think specifically for Democrats, what you saw was a reaction to Democratic grassroots voters being tired of Democratic politicians who are willing to walk away from the party in a way that they consider gratuitous. I think that people in Connecticut thought that Lieberman was, it's one thing if you have different views than the Democratic Party and you stand, you know, and there's a principle behind it, but I think that people thought that Lieberman gratuitously would walk away from the party because he thought it was good for him politically, nationally, and there's now a price to be paid if you do that.
How much of this, Robert, is change for change's sake, do you think?
I think actually there's actually a fair amount of principle involved, and I tend to actually agree, generally speaking, with what Jennifer just said. I think in the context of the Tuesday races, the Cynthia McKinney one is sort of an outlier because, I mean, this is the second time that she'd lost a primary in the last 4 years, and her controversies are well known. But in both Connecticut with Lieberman and in Michigan with Schwartz, you had cases where the grassroots of the parties, which are basically slightly more to the extreme of the broader party, in other words, the conservatives are, you know, are the base part of the Republican Party, the liberals are the base part of the Democrats. They basically said that they don't want Republicans in name only in the Republican side and Democrats in name only, Dinos, as it were, on the Democrat side. And it also has to be looked at in the context where grassroots organizations like the Club for Growth, which really focus on economic issues and lesser government, they have been running candidates against incumbents at the state level, particularly in Pennsylvania, and they had a number of victories knocking off incumbent members of the legislature. So I think you're starting to see a little bit more of a wave of the bases of the party trying to instill a certain kind of principled opposition and adherence to principled positions on both parties.
Speaking of activism, the Congressional Black Caucus has certainly been busy. Let's talk for a moment about the role Maxine Waters played, if any, in Lieberman's defeat. He certainly seems to think so, or at least thinks that he can demonize her to help his now independent campaign for his own seat. For example, here's what he had to say about Maxine Waters.
His number one supporter in and out of here was Maxine Waters, Congresswoman from California. Look, I respect her, but she doesn't speak for the majority of Democrats. Lord knows she certainly doesn't speak for the majority of Americans.
Jennifer, what do you make of that?
I think it's pretty sad to hear, actually, because I think that Lieberman has quotes that I've seen him, that he made yesterday, he's gone over the edge. He was attributing his loss to people in Connecticut that are sympathizers with the terrorists and with the insurgencies in Iraq, and I think lashing out at Maxine Waters, who is very liberal and shows how he has. I don't think he quite has his bearings about him, and I don't know what's going to ultimately happen with his candidacy, but I wouldn't be surprised if within the next 10 days you see him drop out, because he can't continue to run a race where he is alienating liberal Democrats and not appearing to do anything to reach out to conservatives.
So, Robert, is this a desperation, or is it a strategic move on Lieberman's part to take on Maxine in that way?
Well, it's a little bit of both, I think. There's that old saying, you know, paybacks are a you know what,
mm-hmm.
and this goes all the way back to the 2000 race, frankly, where after Al Gore selected Lieberman as his running mate, Maxine Waters was one of the leading black officials questioning him on his view on racial preferences, for example. And so, you know, there's been some kind of, she basically, because he was Gore's pick, she basically said, okay, fine, you know, we'll stick with him. But they've had a certain kind of an animosity for quite some time. Lieberman, frankly, I think has to be very careful here, because if it looks like, if Lamont starts painting Lieberman as playing sort of the racial card, saying, you know, focusing on the role of Al Sharpton and Maxine Waters in the primary loss, Lieberman will actually, I think, start to lose part of his base, which is African American voters. So he wants to get obviously Republican voters and independent voters to come out for him in the general election, but it's a very, very fine line that he's going to be walking.
Here's a quote from a strategist that was in the paper the other day that I thought was very interesting, and here it is. The question is no longer whether the Democrats can win the House, but whether the GOP can do anything about it. So to be successful, this is not part of the quote, what do the Dems have to do, in your opinion, Jennifer, that they have not done successfully since they lost both houses of Congress 12 years ago?
I think that they can't be scared. I think the Democrats are still cower in the face of which are, I think most people would agree, baseless charges of Democrats being soft on terrorism from the Republican Party. I mean, it seems that the only people in America who believe and are moved by what Karl Rove says and what Ken Mellman, the head of the Republican Party, says about Democrats being for cut and run and being soft on terrorism, the only people who are moved by that are the White House and Democrats. And I think that they need to come to grips with the fact that 62% of America is behind them. A majority of America doesn't think that the administration is doing a good job in combating terror. And I think, and they believe that, by the way, because I think it's true. And yet Democrats still continue to be a little cautious in their critiques. And I think that they need to have, you know, the courage of their convictions and be willing to state the obvious and not worry that they're going to get called out for being soft on security.
Can the Republicans stop them, Robert?
Can the Republicans stop
the Democrats? Yeah, can they stop them?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the what the cumulative effect the last few days is going into this weekend, when you balance what happened on Tuesday with the foiling of the bomb plot on the airplanes. Because what the Democrats basically have to try and do is detach Iraq from the war on terror. And in both 2004, they were not able to do that in the presidential election. And the Republicans immediately jumped on the fact of the terror plot to show that Democrats seem to be too willing not just to run away from Iraq, but to run away from the broader war on terror. So the Democrats, meanwhile, responded saying, well, the Republicans knew that these arrests were imminent and they're trying to play games. So this has been the really big problem that the Democrats have had for the last two years in terms of trying to say Iraq is one issue, the war on terror is another. And if they don't change that rhetoric, figure out how to engage the Republicans on this, it may very well be the same playing that we've seen in the last two elections.
I'm going to come to you, Jennifer, with the last question because we have less than a minute left. And it sort of comes in off of what Robert was just talking about with regard to this issue of the terrorist threat. Is this a winnable issue for the GOP?
It could be because they have been very skilled at using it in the past, and Democrats have not been very skilled in responding to it. But I think it is pretty clear, there's a pretty clear answer for Democrats to say, which is I think that the instability in Iraq is has given more rise to the strength of terrorism than 165,000 Democratic primary voters in Connecticut who decided to vote for Ned Lamont because they were unhappy with the war. Mm-hmm. But they need to be willing to make that link.
All right, I appreciate it very much. Jennifer Palmieri is Vice President of Communications at the Center for American Progress and was National Press Secretary for the 2004 Edwards Ford President campaign. And Robert George is an editorial writer for the New York Post and a former senior writer for House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Jennifer, Robert, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.